Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
It's time now to talk to Brian Costello. And Brian is with us to do a little postmortem on the Jets season and little predictions for the future and where they are going to be going. And his report is brought to you by Winters Brothers, Long Island's number one choice for waste removal and recycling services. By CSEA Local 830, we work for you. By Security Dodge Chrysler Jeep Ram, Suffolk County's number one volume dealer, and by Digital Ally, Capture Truth, a proud partner of MetLife Stadium. So, we have come to the end. Now, I understand that, 6-2, the second half of the season is good, and you only play the teams that are ahead of you, and, you know, you can't make up your schedule. But, you know, looking at the wins and the teams that they beat, I don't think you need necessarily to really crow that much about 6-2. They didn't beat anybody that was really good, with the possible exception of Pittsburgh, who, you know, was down to their third string quarterback, and then Buffalo, who really wasn't trying all that hard in that game. So I take that 6-2 with a bit of a grain of salt.
Yeah, I agree with you, Richard. I mean, clearly the schedule had a lot to do with that finish. But that's where the Jets are right now, I would say. Like, they're not a good team. So for them to be beating teams in their own weight class, I think is, you know, it's okay. It's not a bad thing. They're not capable of beating good teams in the NFL right now, especially with the roster that they had toward the end of the season, with all the injuries and, you know, nine different offensive lines, and Vincent Smith starting at wide receiver and Arthur Mollett starting at cornerback. Like, this wasn't a good football team. So, you know, what I would say is it beats the alternative. that's how I think you have to look at it. I think if they had gone 2-6 in the second half of the season, that would have been a lot worse. So I think they're okay to feel good about it. And if they want to say they're optimistic for the future, I mean, Joe Douglas, I think, was the one who was most vocal this week about it. That's something to build on. Like, you know, I think that's fine. I agree with you that, you know, no one should be throwing a parade for this, though.
Yeah, well, there's something to learning how to win, finish games and things like that. And I think that is important because, you know, you learn to get those big defensive stands in the fourth quarter to keep your team ahead when you haven't scored many points. So there's good stuff there. Brings me to Greg Williams. People have called and said, why isn't Greg Williams getting a lot of interviews to the head coaching? Is it, you know, the whole bounty gate or what mm-hmm. what's going on there? Or do you think he will get some opportunities?
I think Greg Williams' best chance of being a head coach again was last year with the Browns, and that didn't happen. You know, I think his best opportunity to be head coach is probably with the Jets. At some point, if they move on from Adam Gase, you know, and Greg Williams is there, maybe he gets a shot as interim coach or to replace him because they know him. But Greg is going to be 62 in July. So, you know, I think teams are starting to trend younger in hiring coaches. You know, we remember the storyline last year was everyone was looking for Sean McVay, right? They were looking for that young offensive coach. Mm-hmm. That's the other half of it. There's still a push for offense. You know, I think we're seeing a little bit more defense this year in the interviews, but last year was all about offense, and that hurts Greg. And Bounty Gate is definitely a big factor. I mean, it's easier to hire him as a defensive coordinator with that baggage than to hire him as a head coach and have that come up. So, you know, I don't think Greg Williams is going anywhere right now. I think he'll be the Jets defensive coordinator next year.
Okay. Well, in your column, I guess it was Thursday, you had a pretty good outline as to what the Jets need to do to improve next year roster-wise. And you started off by saying taking care of their own. Elaborate.
Yeah. You know, I think it starts with Jamal Adams, who, you know, after I wrote that, was named first team All-Pro yesterday. You know, there was talk of trading him at the deadline. I don't think they can trade him now, Richard. I think he proved his worth in the second half of the season, not only just from his play, but the energy he brings. I think they need to do an extension with him, make him the highest paid safety. Eddie Jackson from the Bears got a contract yesterday that made him the highest paid safety at $14.5 million a year. So I think they need to give Jamal $15 million a year. How many years that is depends on what Jamal's looking for. If he wants to be a free agent, you know, in 4 years rather than, you know, if I'm the Jets, I'm trying to lock him up for six, try to keep him here. You know, then I think Jordan Jenkins is a guy I would bring back. You know, he had 8 sacks this year, led the team. Try to bring him back. And Robbie Anderson is another one. You know, I think Robbie Anderson, I would cap a number. You know, like, I would say, all right, we want him back, but not for, like, any price. To me, $12 million a year is about as high as I'd go for Robbie Anderson. And if he gets more than that on the open market, I think you wish him well and let him go. And as far as, you know, Le'Veon Bell is a question, I don't think Le'Veon's going anywhere. I don't think that contract is going to allow them to trade him, even if they wanted to. And I don't think it's smart for them to eat money to trade him. So I think Le'Veon will be back next year.
Now, you know, Gaze has said, look, we talked, and we're going to definitely try to integrate him more into the offense next year,
yeah.
Maybe catching passes, maybe redesign some of the running plays. You on board with that? You buying that?
Yeah, I buy it. I think they can do a few things. You know, obviously the number one priority this offseason is the offensive line, right? That's got to be the top priority on Joe Douglas's shopping list. So, you know, you look at the Buffalo Bills who are playing today. They got 4 new starting offensive linemen last year, and it helped them this year offensively. So, you know, I think the Jets are going to be looking for 3 or 4 different offensive linemen. I think they have to do that. If they rebuild the offensive line, that will help Le'Veon. I think they need to sit down with Frank Pollock, the offensive line coach, Jim Bob Cooter, the running backs coach, and Adam Gase, and say, how can we best use this guy? Because what we did this year didn't work. I would bring a fullback, too. They used Wesco as a fullback a lot of times toward the end of the year. And in some of the games he had better runs in, like Baltimore and Pittsburgh, they lined up Wesco a fullback, and I think that helped. And I think that's something Pittsburgh did with him. So I would consider signing a fullback and adding that to the offense. I think they really, if he's going to be on the roster, they need to figure out a way to, you know, utilize him properly next year. And I think that will be a priority.
Okay, now, talking about the draft, it's very early, and there's names that are going to be bandied about, and the combines haven't happened, and the, you know, college game, bowl games haven't happened. But, you know, you have identified something that I think is pretty important, where teams always say, well, we're going to take the best player available.
Right.
And you've said, well, best player available, but at position of need, as opposed to just, you know, get another defensive lineman.
Yeah, I think Jets fans are tired of the best player available. Right, Marvin Wilkerson was the best player available. Clinton Cope was the best player available. Sheldon Richardson, Leonard Williams, Quinn Williams. Like, it's been defensive tackles are somehow always the best player available when the Jets are drafted. So, to me, at 11, you know, you're probably not going to get those elite players unless something happens like a Laramie Tunsil situation and he tumbles down the board. So, to me, at 11, Joe Douglas has to see the best either the 3 positions: offensive line, edge rusher, cornerback. Whoever the best guy available at number 11, those 3 positions, that's who they should jump on, in my opinion. You know, they probably can get the second best player at one of those positions, drafting at 11, and if they're lucky, maybe one tumbles down there. You know, I mean, the kid from Ohio State was very impressive, I thought. Akuda, watching him last week, the cornerback. And a few years ago, Marshawn Lattimore went down, so I think he was taken 11 by the Saints or in that area. So maybe they somehow he falls down the board and jump on that, and don't try to sell like, oh no, this inside linebacker was better. Like, no, just stick to those 3 positions if you're Joe Douglas.
Yeah, and the other thing too is you've got all those draft picks. You got the 3 and the 5, maybe even 3 and the 4 from the Giants. And, you know, Maccagnan, one of his big failings was those later rounds where he didn't really get a lot from that. So if you can get 2nd, 3rd, 4th rounds, those middle rounds, if you can get productive players there, that's a big plus.
Yeah. It's not even late rounds, Richard. It's the middle rounds, said.
Sure.
You know, like the Jets have 4 picks in the top 8, right? To me, those 4 guys have to be playing next year. You know, if you want to call them starters or major contributors, whatever. Like, they have to be big players for the Jets next year. That will, you know, inject something into this roster if they can find 4 players that are ready to play next year. You look back at last year, they had 2 picks in the 3rd round, and one of them didn't make the roster. Polite got cut at the end of camp. You can't have stuff like that. You know, that guy, that should have been a major player for them this year, and it wasn't. Doga ended up playing quite a bit, the other 3rd round pick, but, you know, they completely whiffed on Polite. So, to me, that's huge for them. They've got to get more than just the first-round pick being a major player for them next year.
And I know nobody values kickers, but I'll tell you, the Jets really need to find somebody. I mean, you just see, I'm going to guarantee that one of these playoff games, a missed field goal is going to be the difference.
You
really need to think about that, maybe fifth round past that, something like that. But if there is a college kicker out there who's exceptional, go get him.
Yeah, there's one. I mean, you look around the league, Richard, the Jets aren't the only ones looking for a kicker. Mm. You know, like it is a plague right now. And I think part of it's the extra point moving back. It kind of accentuates it, how much they miss. But, you know, the field goals guys miss a lot, too. They signed Brett Maher to a futures deal, the guy that was the Cowboys kicker who made the long kick against them. You know, but I think that's basically a training camp invitation. That doesn't mean he's going to be the kicker next year. So they got to solve this because when you look back, you know, they finished 7-9, and you start looking at the games that they lost. That week one game just keeps coming back to me, and they lost because Dedrick, to me, missed, you know, the extra point in the field goal. If he makes a kick, that's a different game, even with the defensive collapse in the fourth quarter. So, you know, it's a huge part of the game. I'm with you. Like, somebody's going to lose a game here because of their kicker probably in the next couple weeks in these playoffs, and it's just a huge part of the game.
Yeah, and looking at their schedule, playing the NFC West, you know, now things change every year, but that's a pretty tough division.
Yeah, you never know, but I think you always look at that cross-conference one, you know, like this year when you was like, oh, NFC East, you thought the Eagles and Cowboys would be pretty good, and then you thought the Giants and Redskins would be down, and it pretty much played out like that. Maybe they were a little worse than we thought. But, yeah, looking at the NFC West, it feels like San Francisco, you know, they might win the Super Bowl, right? They're the number one seed. They're a team on the rise. They're not going to be. I don't think they're going to be declining. You never know. The Rams went down last year. But the Seahawks are the Seahawks. You know, the Rams could have a bounce back year next year. And the Cardinals look like they're an ascending team with Kyler Murray. That's going to be a tough. That's going to be a tough road, I think, next year for the Jets.
All right. Brian, as always, a pleasure, and I'm sure we'll be talking in the off season with the draft and with the combines and everything else. And, of course, you're going to be covering AFC, so we'll get in that stuff, too. Thank you.
All right, Richard. Thanks for having me all year.
We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Odyssey put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Odyssey. Visit ads.odyssey.com.